HK4RM Mobile.
KO4HKX Mobile.
KO4HKX Mobile. This is K4RM Mobile. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And this is Patrick on this end. How are you today?
This is Fred. I'm doing well. Trying to stay cool in this hot weather.
Having better luck at it than I am.
I'm riding in an air-conditioned vehicle right now, so I guess that means something.
Not in one. I've been in and out all day, but it never really has time to cool down. So it's just been hot.
And it doesn't look like there's any rain in sight anytime soon, according to the forecast, so that makes it all the worse. But just heard your KO call. I guess you're relatively new ham. Welcome to the hobby.
I got my ticket back in September, and so I'm studying to get my general now and working on it, but trying to learn all I can in the process.
Fantastic. Yeah, I'm in my ninth year now, and I enjoy it. I spend most of my time on the HF bands, but I do get on a repeater every once in a while.
This repeater is really nice because I run a mobile tool business, so I'm in and out all day long out of the vehicle, and this makes my drive home also. I got an hour and a half drive from down here in Greenville back up to Brevard, so and down of a morning, so really nice to have some company for a change.
The drive go quicker, I'm sure. So you're from Brevard, or you live in Brevard?
Was born there and have lived there most of my life. My parents moved away a couple times while I was younger, and we always ended up back there, and since I've been an adult, I have stayed there.
My home is between Easley and Piedmont. I have a Piedmont address, but we have a mountain house up near Rosman, so I'm very familiar with that area.
Wife is actually from Rosman. She lived up on the Pickens Highway.
But off the Pickens Highway, you know where Babb Road is, B-A-B-B?
I know it real well. That's where she lives. While we were dating, I was in there all the time.
Actually, off of Nancy Mountain Road, which turns off of Babb Road. Over.
Right where you're at.
Wife's maiden name.
Powell, before she met me.
There'll be about 4 million Powells up there.
I'm saying there's two sets of them, and they're not related, but I find that kind of hard to believe.
But I know there's a lot of Powells and Galloways, you know, and other similar names for that part of the country. Scotch-Irish settled, you know, many years ago.
I'm kin to most of them, so my last name, you would never know it, because my grandmother met a man down in Charlotte, and they got married, and now they moved up here, and so I have a last name, but most people don't know that I'm related to them, so I get away with not telling them.
Claim the ones you want and not claim the others, right?
Roger that.
Nice to meet you there. Look me up on QRZ, K4RM, Kilo 4 Romeo Mike, and look forward to talking to you again. Where about exactly in Brevard do you live?
If you're familiar with the area, I actually live in Penrose, or Little River, which is down below DuPont State Forest.
You are. Yeah, right. I know that general area anyway. Well, that's good, yeah. Yeah, well, you kind of know where we are up there at least. It's a second home for us, but we hope to retire up there one day. Over.
Glad to have you up there. It's nice to have somebody else on the radio because there's not much up there, Wade. I recently bought some property toward the middle of the county, so I'll be moving that way shortly, I hope, once everything settles down with these lumber prices.
It's expensive to build right now. Well, like I say, I don't live up there. I live about halfway between Easley and Pickens, but our goal is to one day retire up there. So Anyway, look me up on QRZ and shoot me an email and give me your phone number, and we'll talk sometimes off the air. Over.
After that, and it was KK4RM.
K4 Romeo Mike, K4RM.
Roger that, 1K, K4RM. That's pretty easy to remember. A lot easier than what mine was to get out when I first started. I like to never got it straight.
But I was a 2x3, and then I went to a 1x3, and then I went to a 1x2, which is the shortest you can get.
And now is a 3x3, KO4HKX.
That's what they call a 2x3. You got two numbers, then your call area, which is 4, and then the 3 numbers. So you got a 2x3.
Yeah, I thought of that about the time I spit it out. Sorry about that.
All right, well, good talking to you. I'm getting ready to get out of the vehicle. Nice to have met you, and remind me your name one more time.
I am Patrick, and I'm on here pretty much every day, in and out all day long.
Fred, let me say hello to you before you leave. That sounds like Phil. How you doing, Phil?
Doing good. Let me butt in, Patrick, if he's leaving W4NGU. Man, I hadn't heard you in a while. How's that big 80-pound beam doing?
Great. I thought about you the other day. I'll give you a call sometime, and we'll talk off the air. I want to get you up there sometime.
Love it, man. You have a good hear from you. Don't hear you over here much anymore. But go ahead, Patrick.
Say 7-3s to him, and nice to talk to you. Nice to meet you. And I will definitely look you up and shoot you an email with my contact information. So when you're up that way, maybe we can go hang out or something. KO4HKX, and I'll be mobile and monitoring.
You've got the tool plan, right? What? You know, my dad worked 60 years for insurance companies, and I just don't understand what the deal is with them. They're not coming through for you better. Of course, now, you'll laugh at this. He sold life insurance, and he said, it's very clean business. The guy's either breathing or he's not. If he's not breathing, we cut a check.
I don't know what it is with this insurance here right now. They have used every excuse in the book not to pay out for this. And I think a lot of it's because it's my insurance, because she didn't have enough, and they're having to pay out. But still, yet that's what I'm paying these people to protect me from, is stuff like this. And now they've made the situation much worse because of their shenanigans. Every time we get to a certain point, like the check was supposed to be mailed out 3 or 4 times now, and it hasn't been, they come up needing another piece of information, or they switch it to another adjuster, and he doesn't know what's going on, and he has to find out. Well, then it's another 2 weeks before somebody does something. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I don't know how to deal with them anymore.
What's it for? Or are you afraid that will just bog things down for a couple of years?
Is the truck paid for? I'm going after them. I'm focusing on getting the tool truck paid off so that I can get another tool truck, and then I'll be able to run my business properly and take care of things, and then I can go after them with a lawsuit.
Well, it sounded like a big mess, and I've heard you talk about the availability of trucks, even if you had a check in your hand.
I found one within 2 weeks of mine getting hit. A guy getting out of the business and going independent. So his tool truck is already lettered up the way I need it. All I got to do is go get it and get in it and bring it back and put my inventory in it. And he's been holding it this whole time while he's waiting on his truck, his new truck, to be built. But they've been playing games, and he's within 2 weeks of getting his truck. And once he does, he's going to put it on the market for sale, and it won't last a day.
Understand why a lawyer can't shake that check out. That's a bad situation, man. And how long is it drawn out now? A year?
Just crossed the 6-month mark last week. But I have had a lawyer the last 3 months of that, and he doesn't do anything either. All he does is he'll have his secretary call and find out where they're at or what they're doing, and That's it. Well, that's not what I hired you to do. I can do that on my own. So I am going to go put my face in front of his and his boss's, because he doesn't own the office, the practice. So I'm going to go put my face in front of both of them and have a little powwow and say, this is not what I'm paying for.
Up the bill. And, well, just hang in there. Hopefully it'll be settled before long. Well, Patrick, I'm going to run. I'm Phil, and McCone QTH is Boiling Springs, South Carolina, not North Carolina. So I'm up down Highway 11 and 85 a good bit, and I hear you a good bit, but we'll talk to you later. W4NGU, W4 Never Give Up, listening for your final.
W4NGU, I hear you on here all the time talking to Tom and giving him a hard time, so I have a good laugh at that a lot, and I enjoy it. And so it's good to talk to you, and nice to meet you. If there's ever anything I can do, just let me know. And this is KO4HKX, and I'll be mobile and monitoring.
KX, KK4LAZ.
4HKX, it's Fred, correct?
Elliot, Indian Mike.
I'll get it one day. Sorry about that.
Hey, not a problem, not a problem. It's totally fine. How you doing today? Sounds like you guys were discussing your situation with the tool truck. I just jumped in on the end of that.
Yeah, Rusty and I were talking about it. His dad worked for an insurance agent, and he can't believe how they're doing this. Anybody you talk to can't believe it, but they're doing it, and I don't know what to do with them. I hired a lawyer, and he isn't doing his job either.
About it being a COVID-related thing, I'm sure.
Use that excuse for the first 2 months not to send an adjuster out to do an inspection to see about anything. So they stalled for 2 months right off the jump with the COVID. We can't send anybody out. They might catch COVID. I'm like, well, the truck's been quarantined for 2 months now. It's dead. There's nobody been in it. It died.
It really is a shame. I actually interviewed for a job with a insurance company doing claims adjusting at one point, and didn't end up getting the job, but that's kind of what I got. The feel was that the job would basically be figure out ways to not pay out on whatever the claim was. And so I'm kind of glad I didn't get offered the job.
You can be a decent human, consider yourself a decent human being and work for companies like that. I mean, it's just ridiculous. If a company has those practices, why work for them? Why do you want to put yourself through that and be associated with that kind of garbage?
And the way they pitch it is, oh, yeah, you're going to be helping people get their situations resolved. And I was like, yeah, but it sounds more like what my job is going to be is trying to figure out how to not pay out on claims, just judging by, you know, what I had done some reading and what other folks had told me. And so I'm thinking, like, yeah, exactly what you're saying. I wouldn't feel good doing it myself.
Jack asked the insurance adjuster that the last time I talked to him, how he could have a conscience and work for a company like this and consider himself a human being.
No, I don't. I mean, I guess the company pitches it as, you know, trying to protect the assets of the company. And, you know, the more money the company makes, the more you keep your job. And so maybe you can justify it in your head that way. I really don't know. But anyway, where have you been to today? You been down here in the Greenville area?
My day today is mostly the Cherrydale area. I do cover a little bit of the Sansosa area, I believe it's called, and Nebria. I'll get into it just a little bit, because I'll be over there tomorrow also.
Exactly where you're talking about, the Berea, Sanssouci, Cherrydale, kind of that west, sort of northwest, I guess it technically is. I don't really know. Greenville area. I've got some friends that live up there, so I know exactly where you're talking about. Yeah, I've been out in Spartanburg all day. I spent some time down in Fountain Inn, which is just a little southern suburb of Greenville, and then been in Spartanburg the rest of the day at Wofford College doing a training with them. They've got a audio-visual system there that our company installed a couple years ago, and we had recently done some renovations and updates on it, and so we were just kind of doing a walkthrough with a lot of the newer folks that have come onto staff since we put the system in originally.
When you got turnover like companies have had lately, you're going to have to do a lot of training and re-educating people.
About Wofford is that they actually have folks on staff that are knowledgeable and know what they're doing, and so really what they need is someone to explain the idiosyncrasies or the specifics of the system that they have, and then their people can figure out the rest because, you know, they're familiar with the technology and the equipment. But we'll have some places where they'll go spend, you know, $250,000, $500,000 on an audiovisual and lighting system for the space, and then they don't even have someone on staff that's qualified to operate or run any of it. They've just got, you know, teachers that don't know anything about it. You know, that's a drama teacher, and, you know, they know theater, they know how to teach people how to act, but they don't know how to run sound. And it's crazy that I'll be like, man, you spend all this money on all this equipment and you don't have anyone that knows how to use it. Just boggles my mind.
Have a teacher that actually teaches that part of it in high school. That way you learn something, a valuable skill before you get out.
Not exactly. Is you know, if you're going to have the facilities and have the resources, you know, utilize that and make that a draw for students. You know, have someone on staff that knows what they're doing that can get them up to snuff and up to speed. And I, you know, honest to God, I think what happens more often than not is that, you know, they come to a consultant with we're building this new, you know, facility. It's a $100 million school, $150 million, whatever. You know, like Spartanburg has a brand new high school, and that was pretty pricey. We're building this new school, and, you know, we're putting a theater in it, and we need you to design a system for our theater. And they say, okay. And then they, you know, it gets designed, and then it gets installed. And, you know, at nowhere during that point did anyone stop to think, like, we need to hire someone and pay them $50,000, $60,000 a year just to run this thing.
Used a couple times a year. Why put those big old systems like that in if that's all you're going to do is my thing? Because those systems, I mean, yeah, they'll last a while. You don't outgrow them instantly. But still, I mean, you know, 10, 15 years down the road, they're outdated. And you need to upgrade, and you've got to spend all that money again for something you've used maybe 15, 20 times in 10 years.
Well, what I see happen more often than not is they'll use the space pretty frequently, but they'll never use it properly. And so that's when we get the phone call to come fix everything.
I was in high school. When you went into the auditorium for anything, it was never used to its full potential. They might turn the stage lights on or, you know, the projector and the sound system a little bit, and that's it. None of the real lighting was used or, you know, anywhere close to its potential of anything. That's what I'm saying. Why even have all that stuff?
We've been doing more recently, I won't say more recently, but one of the things that we have been doing and has kind of become a little bit more standard in the last however many years, 5, 6, 7 years, is basically, I don't want to say having two systems because they tie together, but essentially having two ways to control a system. So you've got your traditional, you know, here's your soundboard, here's your light board. Like, you know, you need to have an operator in each of these positions. You know, they need to know what they're doing. They're going to have to be able to plug in lights and aim lights, and they're going to have to be able to, you know, hook up microphones and properly mic up instruments, things like that. Like, you know, your traditional audio system, like you'd see, you know, you've seen for years. But then we'll also do some automation on it. There's a couple companies that do various technology that can essentially talk to all the different pieces in a system and bring it all together in a more simplified interface. And so a lot of times, like, we just did the Greenville Technical College. They just renovated their whole student center, which also has like a 300-seat auditorium in it. So we redid that space. And so we set it up to where they can do full theatrical productions, because they've got, the school has a theater program, and then they've got a high school also on campus that uses that theater for their theater program. And so we set it up so you can, you know, light board, soundboard, you know, the whole nine yards. But we also have a more simplified system that's got, has a touch screen where you can just control a couple of mics and you press a button to turn on all the lights for a presentation, things like that.
It makes much more sense in having a full system in that nobody knows how to use.
The you know, digital conferencing presentation system has become huge these last couple of years. You know, whether it's a, you know, a school has a space, because a lot of these schools, and especially the colleges, these spaces, they'll rent out to the community for events too. So, you know, it's a moneymaker for them. So they like to have the good systems, but at the same time, they like to have something that's simple and easy to work, so that, you know, Joe Blow off the street can come in and have a, you know, a meeting for whatever it happens to be. We, you know, you could rent the space and go do an amateur radio meeting, you know, whatever you wanted to do. KK4LAZ.
Actually, rent them out. A lot of places are afraid to rent them out anymore, so because they don't have anybody on staff that knows how to use that stuff, so nobody knows what to do with it.
I know Greenville Tech has done a couple of decent-sized events. They did the South Carolina gubernatorial debate in, I guess it was 2018 that they did that. And then they do, you know, various conferences and speaking engagements and things like that. And that's where, I mean, it's literally going to be a guy on stage with a microphone at a podium speaking for 3 hours. And, you know, he's got a PowerPoint. So, you know, we give them a real easy little, here's a place on the wall where you can plug in an HDMI cable. And you go over here and you tap on, you know, HDMI 1 go-to projector. And boom, it's done. And there it all is. So, yeah, that kind of thing is becoming a lot more popular, as is streaming. I think that everybody that we put a system in for the last, you know, year and a half since all this COVID stuff started had asked for a streaming encoder and a camera of some kind just so they can get their content out in the world of nobody is going to live events anymore.
He's going to Teams or Zoom or, you know, whatever it is that they're doing, and they need a way to share that across the internet. So, yeah, I can see that.
What I've seen is at one of the schools we did, they had a, and this is more recently, this wasn't back in the middle of all the COVID, so there's students again at the school. It was a choir class, and they brought them all into the auditorium because they could spread out and they wouldn't have to sit right next to each other like they would in the choir room. And the teacher, I guess, was out. I don't know if the teacher was sick or what was going on, but the teacher was out. So they put the teacher up on this huge projection screen with Teams or Zoom or whatever it was, and put them over the PA system, and then all the students are out in the audience, and they've got like a camera on the students, so the students in the audience, so the teacher could see them from their computer remotely, and the teacher taught the class over the PA system on the huge, you know, 20-foot wide projection screen on the stage.
Good use of what they had doing that then. Most of this technology they're using now in the schools goes to waste. My wife works for the school system, just like the computers. Every student in Transylvania County has a computer of their own. I don't think they even use textbooks anymore. So, but up till last year, they weren't using them for anything other than homework assignments, and that's it. And nothing else. So why was the point in having them? Why not just send the paperwork home and do it like we always did instead of wasting millions on computers?
I don't know. Maybe someone ran the numbers and they figured out that, like, you know, over the 4 years a student is in school and the cost of textbooks per student and all this other things, it makes more sense to buy them a laptop when they start and they use it through the entire their entirety of their school. But I really don't know. I don't know how that all works out. I can't imagine that, because I know a lot of the Spartanburg County students have, like, MacBooks. They all get MacBook Airs, and, you know, that's $1,000 laptop. And I imagine that the school district gets a big discount from Apple for buying, you know, 10,000 of the things or whatever, how many they're buying. But I don't know how the numbers work out on that. I'm not sure. All I know is that, yeah, like you, when I was in school, we had a textbook, we had a notepad, and the teacher, if they were going to, you know, write notes, they either do it on a whiteboard or they had one of those little overhead projectors that jotted on.
But, you know, like I said, in Transylvania County, they've had these computers since my son was in middle school, and he's graduated now, and he's 21. So why were we not more prepared for this pandemic for the kids to get an education and miss all this school when we had the technology in place to do it?
A lot of situations like that where we got caught with our pants down and didn't know what to do about it.
Thank you. I've enjoyed the conversation, but I'm coming up on the black hole of Henderson getting here, so I'll have to say 7-3 to you. But I'll keep an ear out for you throughout the day, KO4 ATX, and I'll be clear on your final.
Not care. Drive safe the rest of the way home, and I'll keep an ear out for you as well. KK4LAZ to KO4HKX and 7-3s, and I'll be monitoring.
KK4CBA Mobile.
For CBA, this is KK4LAZ. How are you doing today?
I think I'm doing pretty good. We'll see when I get out on the tennis court. That will tell the tale.
This court, you gonna go play some tennis?
Roger. I played this morning at 9, and it was nice and cool. And I'm gonna get back out there. I'll be playing doubles, so maybe it won't be too bad. Let's see, what does it say? 84? Yeah, that's not too bad. Worse.
Sure, you drink a bunch of water. I know that if I was out running around that right now, I'd drop real quick. And it sounds like your thermometer in your car is a little bit more optimistic than mine, because mine says it's 95 degrees right now. But hey, who knows what's correct?
Two out here at Hinman. KB4 CBA, KN4 VWA.
Actually, mine doesn't say anything. It just displays. But I just pulled out of the garage, so it's probably just going to have to get acclimated here.
Yeah, I definitely know that I'm spending as little time outside as I possibly can, and right now I've got the air conditioning blasting in my face because everywhere seems to be hot these days, and I spend a lot of time in unfinished buildings that either have air conditioning or don't have air conditioning yet, or do have air conditioning, and it's just not up to spec because either they're not all on or people are leaving doors open. So whenever I can, I'm blasting that cool air in my face.
KB4CBA. Well, it's funny how your body gets acclimated to temperature, because when I used to work on cars, people would ask me, say, is that shop air conditioned? And I said, yeah, it cooled down to 95 degrees yesterday. And when you work in the heat and like that, it just doesn't bother you. I guess the same thing with tennis. I just, I couldn't play tennis in 95 degrees with the sun beating down on me, but, I can play at this temperature, I think. Anyway, we're getting ready to find out.
Driving some with a little bit of muscle on it there. I hear some engine noises in the background.
I've got a 2012 Mustang GT. It's about 420 horsepower, and I had the mufflers right at the back of the car. I mean, literally right before the tips, exhaust tips, and I had a guy that Steve introduced me to, Hawk. His nickname is Hawk, and it's up the street there in Greer from where I live, and I took it up there, and he took the mufflers off and just welded in a straight piece of pipe, so it just wasn't quite loud enough for me. You should hear it when I get down on it.
Coyote engines sound absolutely amazing when you get on it. I think that there is no other V8 out there that's not like something exotic that has that same sound to it. I just absolutely love it. I've never had one myself, but I've been around plenty of them, and got friends that have them, and it doesn't matter whether it's in a Mustang or in a truck. I just love the way that thing sounds. My Tahoe here's just got the Chevy small block in it, and I think it sounds pretty good, but nothing like that 5.0.
Now, my daughter had a Tahoe, and it had single exhaust, and it sounded pretty decent, but I told her, I said, you put dual exhaust on that thing, and it would really sound good. And I imagine there's probably a kit for it, you know, that would bolt on. All these exhaust companies are making those for, do-it-yourselfers, because, people don't want to go and have somebody, do it for them, and when they can just unbolt what's there and bolt on the new kit. And in fact, I've done that before. I've done a cat-back system with my 90 Mustang, and then my 96, I put an X-pipe on it, took all the cats off of it. The thing had 6 catalytic converters.
That's ridiculous. I thought that this thing was bad, and it has, I think, 2. The one, I might be wrong, it might be 3. I think it's 2. It's got like one upstream and then one, in the downpipe pretty much, and then one that's a larger one that's before the cat or before the muffler. But I mean, I did a cheap exhaust on this. The previous owner of the truck, or I guess 2 previous owners ago, had put on some Flowmasters back in, well, a Flowmaster. It's a single entry dual exit muffler, so it comes off the headers into a downpipe where it merges together, and then it hits a single muffler, and then it splits at the muffler and goes to dual tips. And the previous owner had put on a Flowmaster 40 or something like that probably about 15 years ago now. It's an old truck. And it was starting to basically fall apart and fall off. So last year I had a guy out in Spartanburg just weld on a new, it's a Flowmaster Super 10, I think is what, it's like the most aggressive street Flowmaster you can get. And then I had him do new tailpipe, new exhaust tips on it. I like the way it sounds. I wish it was a little louder, but I mean, it gets the job done. It's not obnoxious. So I don't know. We'll see. Maybe down the road I'll do true duels on it and not the fakes.
You got a phone call. You still in there? KN4VWA. This is KB4CBA Mobile.
KK4LAZ, yeah, I had a phone call come in just now.
I think right at the end of your transmission.
It's a good little setup on the truck. I mean, it gets the job done. It sounds good. It doesn't sound stock, so that's kind of what I was going for. It's, a more aggressive sound, especially on cold starts. It sounds really good, and it's not droney, which I appreciate. I had a Mustang. It was a 5.0. Is a 94? 4. It was a 94. So it was the first year of that newer SN95 body style. And it had true dual Flowmaster 40s on it, I think, when I bought it, and they were falling off too. It seems like I always get cars with exhaust that's falling off. So I had these resonators put on it called SLP loudmouth, and it was basically like straight pipe, and it made it worse, and I would not do it again. But it was horribly drony when you were going down the highway at 70, 75 miles an hour. All you could hear was just just car just droning. It was terrible.
Yeah, this one does have a little drone sound. It's not too bad on the highway, but unless I just really get down on it pretty hard, if I just drive it like a little old lady, it doesn't growl too much. But man, you get down on this thing and it really sounds good. I tell you, I just think it has an awesome sound, especially since I took those mufflers off.
add anything else to it besides the exhaust?
No, I mean, there's, I would like to visit like a bolt-on kit for a supercharger. I wouldn't mind doing that. But I just don't know, you know, how much this engine can take. Yeah, I just don't want to screw anything up on it. But one thing I've noticed is they've gotten smart, and or some companies have, and they are putting like reservoirs on turbos, and like the superchargers have, a supercharger has its own oil reservoir with a window, so you can see, you know, if you need to add oil to it. And but the turbos used to have this little tiny oil line. It's ridiculous, about the size of a pencil, diameter of a pencil, and that's what the oil flowed through, and to lubricate the turbo. And the reason they had so much trouble with turbos is that people would, you know, just run the heck out of it and then shut it off hot, and not let, you're supposed to just let it sit there and idle, and for you know, 2 or 3 minutes, and let it cool down a little bit, and they'd shut it down, and that oil would actually boil in that tube feeding to the turbo, and it would eventually stop it up, and then you'd have a turbo failure, you know, catastrophic failure. So now they've gotten smart and put reservoirs on turbos, and it's really not, it's really a good idea.
Really thought about that, but yeah, that makes sense, because most of the time those turbo supply and return lines are really, really thin. I looked at doing a turbo kit on, I've got a little Mazda Miata, and I looked at throwing a turbo kit on it a couple times and never even really thought that there might be a better way to do it than just running the line out of the high pressure hose, or you know, out of the high pressure port and then back into the oil pan, because I can definitely see that becoming an issue, especially when you beat on it, because really that heat soak after you shut the motor off is pretty vicious.
Some cars are actually designed to keep running. You shut the key off and get out, and it's still running, and it'll run, you know, until a set temperature, and then it'll shut off. Of course, you know, if anybody gets in and tries to drive it, it would just shut off. But unless they had a key, you know, to put in the ignition switch. But but most cars don't have that, and you know, I just know that that's a big problem with the older style turbos. They, you know, they work great when they could get oil, but if you ever got starved for oil, and, you know, it was just all over. And I can remember I used to work on the Mazda CX-7 was pretty famous for, you know, burning up turbos, and you could reach in there and just wiggle the turbine shaft and feel the play in it, and of course they had some other problems with them too. I won't get into all that, but with the variable valve timing actuator. But anyway, but they finally got all that ironed out. But it never has made any sense to me that they put that little tiny line, old line on that on a turbo and then expect it to expect it to perform like it's supposed to, you know, knowing the average person's not gonna, you know, they either don't know to let leave it running or they just, you know, in too big of a hurry.
Yes, what was driving the innovation, knock on wood, suppose, I guess you could call it that, is the fact that they were probably blowing up and they started putting turbos in more and more everyday driver cars and people were having turbos blow up on them and they figured, well, we got to do something about this because it's costing us too much money whenever someone comes in with one of these blown up turbos on these KK4 LAZ.
4CBA. Yeah, I did some under warranty, and I did some that were out of warranty, so customer pay, so ouch. Yeah, if you had to pay for it yourself out of pocket, it was kind of rough. But anyway, I'm waiting for this guy to get out of the way. I don't know what he's doing. He's asleep behind the wheel, I guess. But they have made some good improvements, and I love the performance of a turbo. In fact, the dual turbos is really the way to go because you have one that takes care of your low end. Low RPM range, and so you don't have that turbo lag, and then the other one picks up, you know, mid-range and on up, and so that's why you hear that a lot of cars have two turbos, but they're making, I know Ford's making these Broncos have little bitty four cylinders in them. In fact, I think they have a three cylinder, and it's turbocharged and makes, I don't know, somewhere around 230 horsepower, I think.
Little turbocharged Volkswagen for a while that I really liked, but it had the problem just like you were talking about, where I don't want to say the turbo was too big, but it was too big. It took too long to spool, and you know, you wouldn't get any power at all until about 2200 RPMs or so. I mean, everything below that right off the line was nothing. But, I mean, it would rev fast enough, it would move quick enough that once you got into boost, it would actually get out of its own way, no problem. I tell you what I think is probably the biggest problem with modern engine design is now everything is direct injected, but most vehicles don't come with a catch can to get all that, like that CCV oil, you know, that blows around in the valve train up there. It doesn't have any kind of catch can to pick up all of that, so now you've got these engines that are getting a bunch of old oil sludge caked up on the valves, and that's leading to all kinds of issues. I had to have, and I do most of my work myself, but on that car I was lazy because I didn't want to tear into a German engine. And I had to have that thing cleaned. I had to have the valves all cleaned because it got to a point where it was running so rough because those valves were caked that it was misfiring and the check engine light was on and all kinds of stuff. And that just seems to be kind of a common issue with all these newer direct injected motors that aren't cleaning the valves because the fuel is coming in from above the valves.
KV4CBA. Well, that's interesting because yeah, I hadn't really thought about that. I guess in that case, golly day, I'm trying to think. Like, so a fuel system flush wouldn't take care of that, I don't guess. Well, that's rather interesting. Because seems like the oil will stay hot enough to run back down into the pan. But anyway, I don't know the answer to that one. Oh, me. I'm just glad I don't have to work on them every day. Working at a dealership, it got to really be a headache. And and there were a lot of, there were several things that were just really frustrating, and, you know, I won't get into all that either, but it can be very frustrating, especially when it's a warranty job and you don't get paid but about a third of what it actually would pay if, you know, if the customer was paying for it. So, you know, right off the bat, you're losing money because you're not going to make any money because it's a warranty job, and that's just that's a bad word to a mechanic.
Didn't realize that the warranty jobs weren't paid, the mechanics weren't paid the standard rate that they get, because I know that when I walk in and I need to have a water pump changed, and you know the book time on it is 2 hours, and you know the mechanic gets it done in 1 hour, I'm still paying for 2 hours of labor. I didn't realize it was like that, where if it was a warranty job that the mechanic got paid less, that is no good.
One of the most frustrating things was people would come in and the stereo system wouldn't work. So you've got to pull all the trim, dash trim out, not, you know, break anything and scratch up anything and get the radio out and get a number off the back of it. And then put the radio back in and give that number to parts, and they order a radio, put the radio back in, put everything back together, and give back to the customer and say, you know, your radio will be here, or we'll call you when it comes in. And when it came in, you don't get paid for that. You just do all that for nothing. And then when the radio comes in, that's when you get paid. Because you're exchanging the radio, but the thing is, if you were busy on a waiter, they'd give that job to somebody else. So you did all that work to get that thing out and get that number off of it, and then put it all back together, and you didn't get paid a dime for it. I'm not a penny, and just stuff like that. It just really grates on your nerves after a while, because. Or it did mine. I was supposed to be making $20 an hour flat rate, and I figured out the hours that I was putting in my, I took my annual salary and divided it by 52, and so I know how much I made in a week, and then divide that by the number of hours I worked a week, and I was making about $12. Just right at $12 an hour.
I definitely would not be about that. There's something to be said about doing some work for free if it means that you get some work down the line. But yeah, if you're busy and tied up and can't get back on the job, and then you did all that, all that work for nothing, I would I would be bent out of shape too. I've never personally been in a situation like that, but I know others that have, and, a lot of times I know that, if I've been working with somebody on something, I try to make sure I work with them on it again to make sure that they're the one that gets credit for it. But, more often than not, they're trained to say, oh, no, we're not on commission or anything like that, so it doesn't matter. You can work with me, you can work with John, but, having been in retail myself, I know for a fact that even if you aren't necessarily getting a commission off of it, you're getting something out of the fact that you made a sale. So I can totally understand that.
Well, like I said, I'm just glad to be out of it. It put food on the table, and I basically worked two jobs all my life, so I put in about probably 80, 85 hours a week on average, and and of course I got to retire when I was 60, so, or 59, so... I can't complain about that. So I've been just having a good old time and playing tennis every day, and just about every day anyway. And and, you know, being able to purchase things that I wasn't able to purchase when the kids were growing up and they were still in the house and all that. I don't have to, you know, go look at the checkbook balance before I buy something, you know, for $25. To see if there's money in the bank. Oh, man. Well, I'm sitting here at the sports club, so I'm going to go in and warm up these old knees, and then I've got a game at 6 o'clock. But good to talk with you. I believe it's Jim. You can correct me there if I'm wrong. But anyway, I'll say 73, and I'll stick around for your final. But enjoyed it. KB4CBA.
Well, yeah, definitely enjoy playing tennis, and good luck with your game. I hope everything goes well. And you were correct. It is Jim here on this end at my location. I'm down in Simpsonville now. We started a conversation. I was in Woodruff, but now I'm in downtown Simpsonville, so I'm about at my destination as well. Anyway, 7-3s to you. Good luck in the game. Good talking to you. Was that, correct me if I'm wrong here, KB4CPA? Was that correct?
Bravo 4, Charlie, Bravo Alpha.
Okay, perfect. Well, this is Kilo Kilo 4, Lima Alpha Zulu to Kilo Bravo 4, Charlie Bravo Alpha. I probably got that wrong again. Anyway, 7-3s, and good luck to you in your game. Have a good evening. Good talking to you, and I'm clear.